Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:06 PM, and that is Central Time. Today is March 29th, and I thought that what we've had in here today has been a significant reaction to the liquidations that we saw last week. So Viacom went from under $20 to $100, and from 100 to 40 in the space of a week, and that's pretty profound, and the only way that you can explain that kind of move is through mass liquidation. So there was news over the weekend that there had been block trades by Goldman and by Morgan Stanley to liquidate positions, exiting this hedge fund, and really that it was a mass liquidation of their positions. But what it is a wider reflection of is the rotation that we're seeing out of some of the stay-at-home winners. When we think about Viacom or Discovery, well, they did really very well as a result of people staying at home and spending most of their time just plunked in front of the TV. So that was certainly a significant factor in their ability to really do very well from the entire pandemic. But then, of course, the question is, how sustainable is that? And that is perhaps the most important question for the vast majority of the stay-at-home champions. How sustainable is it that they're going to be able to keep up this pace of advance? Well, this was brought home to everybody last week because of these significant downdrafts. But then we can also think about, well, some companies that were unremarkable before the pandemic, are they still as unremarkable as they were then? And it's, I think, worth considering that there were a number of these types of companies were considered value by certain investors. So that has been one of the factors that contributed to their outperformance, that they offered the scope, at least, that one could do well from them if only something had happened to reignite interest in their businesses. So obviously the pandemic reignited their interest in their businesses, but then the question, of course, is how sustainable is that? And with people starting to get out and about again and becoming more mobile, well, it does, of course, raise the question. If they're going to be more mobile, they're not going to be staying at home plonked in front of their TVs or their computer screens any longer. And I think that that's equally true, and it applies equally to Zoom Media, which obviously did spectacularly well, peaked in October, and remains in a downtrend. And it is below the trend mean, and it does continue to decline. It's quite likely that 2020 was peak Netflix. Now the share was and does continue to hold this $500 area right now. And so long as it is holding that range, well, I think investors will be willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. The one thing, though, that I think is particularly coming through in the technology sector is that the Nasdaq has been pulling back now for about 2 months, and it was in negative territory today, not in a dynamic manner by any means, and it held on to the advance that we posted on Friday, but there's certainly been a period of time where it has been underperforming. Then we can think about the portions of the technology sector that might be considered value, and IBM would be, I think, falling into that category. It's been ranging now for most of the last year, and it popped on the upside to hit a new recovery high today. Now, that has not broken the 8-year downtrend, but it is looking more encouraging overall. And this willingness to give the benefit of the doubt to the dividend aristocrat portion of the technology sector over the highly speculative loss-making portion of the sector, that is reflective of the wider rotation that's going on in the market. Then we have the determination of the ARK suite of ETFs to throw caution to the wind. They've decided that they are going to dispense with their ownership limits on these reasonably small companies that don't have earnings, and they are going to own even more of them, And then they're also going to enable their ETFs to buy the SPACs portion of the market. And that wasn't confidence inducing for investors today. The ETF, though, is right in the region of the trend mean. So they are trying to do something to reignite speculative interest in it. Of course, they are also tied at the hip to what happens with Tesla. And Tesla continues to ease back from the intra-month peak. Of course, it did bounce from the region of the trend mean, and it does do well in a low interest rate environment where there is lots of available liquidity. But the challenge for that, of course, is that 10-year yields are still trending higher. And it was up another 3 basis points in here today. So this still remains a very consistent trend. It would have had to sustain the move below the 1.6 level in order to question the consistency of this move. So that, I think, is also standing out here, that we have not seen a respite in this continued uptrend in terms of yields. When we then think about the big declines that we've seen in Discovery and CBS, then it's also worth considering that AT&T also has a streaming arm in HBO, and the share was in positive territory over the course of the last while, and then it also has a yield advantage at 6.8%, and it's a dividend aristocrat because it has been raising that dividend rather steadily for a prolonged period. Then we have the dividend champions, the ones that have been raising dividends since their IPOs, like Visa, and they don't have the dividend yield, but they do have dividend growth. And Visa has been increasing its dividend by about 12% over the course of the last year, and the share is now steadying from the region of its trend mean. So that is also encouraging. We can think about, well, what is it that investors want? They're worried about inflation. And they're worried about the continued trend higher in bond yields. So there is appetite for value, but more importantly, there's appetite for dividends and for a security that companies will be able to continue to raise their dividends and remain competitive with inflationary pressures when they arise. It's inevitable that we're going to have an inflationary response to the massive dislocations we've had in the global economy over the course of the last year. The only open question is how sustainable will that inflationary move be? That's why paying such close attention to the willingness of governments to embark upon, continue and persist in embarking upon modern monetary theory is so important. That's also why it's important to monitor globalization and geopolitical tensions, because it's quite likely that we've hit peak disinflation, peak globalization, and peak regulation, or deregulation, I should say. It's much more likely also that we're going to have greater unionization, more regulation of speculative industries, and more taxation. So all of those factors run counter to the factors that were inhibiting the growth of inflation over the last 40 years. And if those trends persist, well, then it's quite likely that we are in a new inflationary cycle. And of course, the question that investors will have is, why isn't gold doing better against that background? It was down $20 in here today, and it continues to trend lower, and we have not had the pop on the upside. It has bounced by $100 from 1900, 1800, and then it failed to bounce by $100 from $1,700. So there's the potential that we could see an acceleration lower in the downtrend before we eventually see some support coming through. I remain very much of the opinion that it is inevitable that the Federal Reserve will have to intervene in the stock market, but they're unlikely to do so until they see a reaction of approximately 20%. And until that happens, until there's clear evidence that rising yields have a deleterious effect on stocks, then they're unlikely to arrest the advance in yields. And from the perspective of bond buyers, why would they wade in and start buying bonds until they have some security that that decision will be at least supported by the central bank? And we also have the fact that the dollar remains quite firm. We are definitely seeing that there is some trading around of the pace with which vaccines are being rolled out. And Europe is behind the curve, particularly behind the curve relative to the USA, so the dollar is appreciating versus the euro. And then we can also think that countries that successfully sidestepped the ravages of the pandemic, like Japan, well, now they have a gargantuan task in front of them to immunize their entire populations before they can really open up their borders again. So in many respects, it's the countries that were hit hardest and then, and as a result, invested most in vaccinations are the ones that are likely to come out of this episode faster. And Japan certainly has a long way to go to vaccinate its population, particularly considering how many elderly people they have. So the yen is now weakening. It's been up, or the dollar has been up against it for the last three consecutive days and pushing on to a new recovery high. We can also see that it is rapidly approaching the psychological 110 area. And if it sustains a move above that level, well, then it will have broken the medium-term sequence of lower rally highs. And generally speaking, when the yen weakens, and particularly when it trends lower, then that's positive for Japanese equities, at least in nominal terms. So the Nikkei was in positive territory in here today. We can then also begin to measure the effects of this liquidation on China. The renminbi continues to weaken, and the dollar is now trending higher against it. So China has certainly determined that they don't want to have the strongest currency in the world any longer, and it's not doing their exports any favors. So there's certainly this competitive devaluation going on. There is no country wants a strong currency, and some need a weaker currency more than others. But all of them are willing to do what is necessary to devalue their currencies in a haphazard fashion. Until we see clear determination to try and suppress yields, I suspect that gold is going to remain under pressure. Then we had the, if with the renminbi starting to come back down, there is less demand for Chinese equities, and they were also caught up in the very significant pullbacks that we saw last week in the broader media sector. So Ichii completed a full reversion from the upper side of its range to the lower side, and it was in negative territory as well today. Baidu is now right in the region of its trend mean, and it also pulled back extremely violently. And then we can think about Tencent is also right in the region of its trend mean and did not experience the same accelerated decline. So these are potential areas of support, and so is Alibaba. Although it is below its trend mean, it's right in the region of its lows from back in January. Of course, it is going to have to do better than that. It at least needs to sustain a move back above the $250 area. It's just about holding its medium-term sequence of higher reaction lows. So it really is do or die here for Alibaba overall. And then we can think about some of the better performers over the course of the last decade. Like, for example, New Oriental Education and Technology Group. Massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Certainly scope for a reversion back up towards the mean. But of course, then the big question is, will it be able to sustain a move back above it? With the collapse of hedge funds, particularly those that were highly levered, it's raising the specter of parallels with what we saw with Barclays back in 2007. That was the straw in the wind before Bear Stearns eventually went bust. We're not seeing the same degree of contagion following the liquidation of the hedge fund last week. But there are two points that are worth considering. The first is that it did have a knock-on effect for Nomura and for Credit Suisse. Sorry, I didn't click on the right one there. But Nomura lost almost 2 billion in this episode, which is a significant sum, and the share certainly pulled back. But back in 2007, it was Barclays lost $400 million. That's a rounding error compared to the sums that are being thrown around in today's market. So when we do eventually see a big fund go belly up, then it's quite likely that it's going to be extremely large, and that we're probably only on the very, very thin end of that wedge. And there is, of course, the clear scope that other funds are going to learn their lesson. They're going to start hedging, and they're going to start rotating out of some speculative ventures and into others. So AT&T would be the more value portion of the media sector. IBM is the more value portion of the semiconductors sector. Then Microsoft and Google are the more steady and the more growth-oriented or dividend-oriented portions of the high-tech market. So is Apple. Amazon is and certainly has a very dominant position in terms of cloud networks. So does Google. And then they are exposed to losing revenue if some of these smaller companies do eventually go bust. The SPAC frenzy, there is a frenzy of people trying to issue new shares, but their performance is certainly not keeping up. And the IPO ETF is also now right in the region of its trend mean. So far it has held support here. We may yet start to see it doing better from here, but it will certainly need to bounce soon. Whereas then we can think about the continued outperformance of value, and I think that's one of the more important points, that if we are in fact going into an inflationary environment, then value should outperform. And value does best with a discount rate, value does worst with a discount rate, and of course vice versa. So growth has been doing spectacularly well over the last decade because of the absence or the declining discount rate. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.